Welcome to the Canadian Orange Podcast. As the inverse of current clown politics in Canada, this is a place where well-informed, thoughtful people can talk about serious topics. And the Orange mission is to fix the money so we can begin the work of fixing Canada. My name's Nick, and I have the honor of speaking with Brian DeMint in this episode. And if this conversation resonates with you or offered you value, please consider sharing it with someone who's ready to hear it or donating at CanadianOrangeParty.com to support the show. Current block height is 931,437. Hash rate is at 1,073 exahashes per second. And one Canadian dollar currently buys you 793 sats. Brian, thanks for being here.
Nick, thanks for having me, brother. This is it really is a pleasure, man. Happy to be with the neighbors up north here.
Amazing. Likewise. Well, we appreciate any wisdom from our counterparts down south who are clearly doing better than us right now. So your time is appreciated. I don't take it for granted. And, I want to start by sort of framing the intended audience. So, Canada is one of the most propagandized countries in the world, and yet most Canadians have zero awareness that that's the case. And I think that as fiat continues to inflict pain, the hope is that more and more Canadians who are ready to accept more responsibility for their lives are going to find the Orange Movement and hopefully find this podcast. So, for this episode, let's imagine that we're on stage in an auditorium filled with hundreds of Canadians who have experienced massive fiat pain and are ready to hear the truth about the ongoing deception by politicians who want to deceive them. And these Canadians are ready to understand propaganda, how it's used, all the tactics so that they can protect themselves and spread the word to people they love so that they can protect themselves as well. So you wrote a book called Parallel, The Bitcoin Social Layer. And you break down the concept of propaganda wonderfully. So that was sort of the reason why I wanted to interview you on this topic. And so the first question I have for you is, what is propaganda? If someone kind of knows they're being lied to, doesn't really fully understand the mechanics of it, maybe has never even heard the word propaganda apart from in fictional stories, lay it into us of what is propaganda and why should people care?
I mean, the shotgun definition of propaganda, and obviously we can go an inch deep here and then we can go a mile deep as we go. But the inch deep is it's lies, deception, the misrepresentation of the truth in order to sway public opinion. And that's the definition right there. And so as you can imagine, I'm sure people's minds are racing when they hear that definition with all sorts of things that they've seen, especially in the Bitcoin community. I think that you're like, yeah, I can think of issues when it comes to money or when it comes to the media or when it comes to food or when it, whatever. I'm sure our minds race with different layers of propaganda we've seen stacked against us, but that is just what it is. It is lies to sway public opinion. And you think about it's sometimes the simplest definitions are the most pervasive. They're like we want something that's as insidious as propaganda to have this really sophisticated definition because we don't want to have been swindled simply. Like we hope that it was something very complicated and very nuanced that swindled us. No, it was just lies that changed our opinion about things. And the cool thing about how simple that the fact is that propaganda, so that it is so simple, is that the unwinding of it is equally simple. It is just replacing the lies with truth and allowing truth to sway public opinion. Now, the why people they want to hold on to propaganda sometimes is sometimes the lies and the deceit makes society run smoothly. It does. It can make things safe. It can make things comfortable. Sometimes the truth is very uncomfortable, right? If I'd put on 10 extra pounds of holiday weight and you're my best bud and you're saying, hey Brian, like it looks like you packed on you ate a bit too much sugar over the holidays. Like that's an uncomfortable truth. And it is true and it is real. But it would have been much more cozy for you to continue to coddle me and to tell me things that I wanted to hear. And so sometimes propaganda is that. It's not always incredibly malicious. It can sometimes be just to soothe people's ears. It can be for all sorts of reasons. So we don't always have to just, we don't always have to ascribe malicious intent, but whether it's malicious intent or whether it's nice intent, lies will always lead to ruin. And that's what we need to get around is because I think a lot of people who want to defend the establishment, they say, well, those doctors are well-meaning people, or, oh, there's central bankers who are well-meaning people. Sure. But at the end of the day, that does not matter. If they're willing to lie in order to sway your opinion, they should not be in power.
Agreed. And I think it is a big paradigm, right? Would you rather hear comfortable truths that don't challenge your perspective on life, that don't create extra burden on you to have to think through your assumptions? Or would you rather hear uncomfortable lies? Or would you rather hear uncomfortable truths, rather? And I think a lot of what government says as propaganda are actually these very nice sounding, quote unquote, virtuous things on the surface at a superficial level. And I think I think most Canadians will resonate with the fact that when you hear enough nice things, but you look outside and you see terrible things happening, or you feel terrible things happening in your life, there's a disconnect there that requires some sort of understanding to be bridged. And I think the reality is the nicer the things that are told to us by politicians, they're probably done in order to hide the fact that what they're actually doing is causing immense damage. And I think that's, you know, this is one of those things where once you see through the lens of truth, you cannot, it becomes actually very uncomfortable to go back into these formerly comfortable lies. One thing I wanted to ask you is, how do you explain, okay, someone, you let someone know that, they're like, okay, I understand now that propaganda is the way the government sways us to distract us from what's actually going on and deceive us. What is the relationship? How do you explain the relationship between propaganda and fiat currency? Does fiat currency, is it the source of propaganda? Is it just correlated to it? What's the relationship between those two? I'm curious to hear you explain that.
Fiat currency enables the propaganda machine to continue. That's simple. My 2026 resolution is to try and think more simply and more clearly. And so hopefully that doesn't become annoying, I want to break that down to a soundbite, is that the central bank will exists, or one of the things that it does, whether that's its sole purpose for existing or not, one of the things that it does is that it allows lies to be perpetuated, because guess what? They will tolerate a lie, whether they know it's a lie and they're at the top and they're the ones that have to help perpetuate the lie, or whether it's somebody at the bottom, it will help. The central bank will finance the lie. And let me explain what I mean by that. Let's go back to COVID. In the United States, as I'm sure in many places like Canada, something like COVID lockdowns would have never been tolerated, not in a million years, in a freedom-loving society. And even just from like a rational brain, who on earth would go in for 3 months and not leave their house? Your business was closed. Your ability to make money was closed. You know, everything was shut down. COVID restrictions, society only accepted staying in our house, not making money, not being productive, because there was a central bank that could flip a switch that said, don't worry, stay at home. Here's a check. You don't have to earn money. So that mechanism right there allowed propaganda to play out, because not only could they, you know, they would get the experts on TV to tell you, hey, you should, for your own safety and the safety of others, stay inside. That was the first step, but you needed the money printer to pay people to stay inside. You gave them a reason to stay inside, but now you gave them the means to stay inside.
That makes sense. And I'm a big fan of simple explanations. And I think anyone who wants these complex, elaborate things is probably just finding comfort in not having to think of a few words that have the highest potency. So I have big respect for that. Feel free to keep it as brief with your explanations as you want. And I think that was a really good explanation, because it's almost this multi-pronged thing where not only does a fraudulent currency create a need for the propagation of lies, but it actually is the primary enabler, because you can't fund lies without being able to print money out of nowhere without asking permission. So that makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, think if the U.S. government was on a truly gold standard, like say not just a gold standard, but just gold money, like they only had gold bars, gold coins, or they only had Bitcoin, the COVID thing, that the government's treasury or the Canadian government's treasury would have been tapped very, very quickly. I mean, COVID stimulus was something in the order of like several trillion dollars. I don't think that they have several trillion dollars in the treasury at any given time. And so if they did, they would have completely tapped the treasury. That means no war spending. That means no social programs. That means nothing other than paying people to stay in their homes. Would the government, where's the incentive for the government to do that when after they pay everybody to stay in their homes, there's no money to continue to function the government? They would have burned their own resource. And so when you think of it like that, on a Bitcoin, on a true Bitcoin standard, on a true gold standard, the government would have mechanically been unable to finance you to stay home. Same thing's true with war. Bitcoiners, this is one of the things that Bitcoiners are keenly aware of, is that war is also financed by fiat currency. When fiat currency in the sense that money printing will fund it as opposed to tax revenues, because this is even within the fiat ecosystem, there's taxation and there's money printing. If our leaders want to go to war in the Middle East to acquire oil or to acquire minerals or to acquire territory, they're unlikely to be able to go back to the population and say, hey, we want to raise your taxes by 10% because we need new weapons to go into the Middle East, into this conflict that you guys don't really care about, to get minerals. The population is not going to give more money out of their paycheck in order to fund an aggressive war. But if China invaded New York and we heard there's rumors that they're going to invade the West Coast as well, well, guess what? I'm going to give you every dollar I have in taxation to make sure that the homeland is defended, because that would be probably one of the very few times I, Brian Dement, would gladly pay taxes so that you protect my family, because the government is much better in terms of the military, has much more firepower to protect me and my family than I do. Like I like bearing arms and all that kind of stuff. But yes, me and my neighbors getting together with our rifles is probably not going to be a good defense against China. So yes, I will gladly pay the military to defend the homeland, but I don't want to pay extra taxes and I don't want to pay the military to go make aggressive wars for things that I don't really care about. The government can only fund those aggressive wars through money printing, because they know if they come to me, they know if they come to you, we're going to say, no, I will not pay you more taxes. And they do that enough, there's going to be a revolt. So what they do is they flip the switch on the money printers, and guess what? The money just appeared. And now we get to go fight that war of aggression. So whether it's COVID, whether it's war, whether it's, we can get into medical issues, all of those things, it is the enabler of everything else. Media is corrupt. The pharmaceutical industry and medical industry is corrupt. The military industrial complex is corrupt. We know all of these things are corrupt, but guess what? Wouldn't it make sense? And isn't it just intuitive that the most corrupt industry of all industries would be the industry of money, the industry of central banking? And like, for some reason, everybody left, right, center, everybody's like, yeah, big tech is corrupt. Yeah, the big pharma is corrupt. But for whatever reason, when it comes to the central bank, they think the central bank is altruistic. And that is the craziest piece of propaganda anybody could ever believe. It's because the central bank enables all of those other corrupt industries to function in their system of corruption.
What a scam. It really is. I mean, I have a 2-year-old daughter. When she's 25, I think she'll look back and there will be historical case studies written about how insane these times were and how absurd it is that we allowed this to happen. But being in it, I mean, walking around, talking to people, it's one of these really insidious things where they create more money, they make life harder for everyone. Everyone has less bandwidth to actually have time to learn about how all this works. And so it's like the king distraction is making life harder, which covers up the fact that they're doing it on purpose. And I think, yeah, I think with propaganda, you know, if, okay, say, let's do a thought experiment. Say tomorrow, the United States switched to a sound money standard. So they flip a switch. Obviously, this isn't realistic, but let's just go with this. They flip a switch, they can't print more money. What do you think happens to propaganda overnight? Does it basically just die because it's no longer palatable to fund? How does it unwind itself? I mean, if we're living through, if hyperbitcoinization is a personal event, you've been hyperbitcoinized, I've been hyperbitcoinized. Gradually, more and more people are adopting Bitcoin as a way to save their time. Therefore, when their time is protected, they have more time to figure out how heinous the actual fiat system is, and they're opting out and remove. They're shrinking their fiat footprint more and more and more. This is what I'm seeing in Bitcoiners around me and people who are sort of adopting Bitcoin as a store of value, as their default money. How do you envision things going? I mean, first of all, what happens to propaganda if we flip a switch and we go to a sound money standard? And then, I guess more of a realistic view is like if people are gradually adopting Bitcoin and becoming immune to propaganda because they see the truth. How do you see this thing unwinding? I would love to know, you know, I love to hear from Bitcoiners who are in this world thinking about this. Like, how does this play out? It can be as broad or general, or maybe the answer is I don't know. But I'd love to hear your take on if we switch tomorrow, what happens to propaganda? And if we go along the path we're on and people are gradually adopting it, what happens to propaganda over time?
That's a great question, Nick. And I think it's one I haven't really considered a lot. I think I've certainly considered it, but I guess I never have gone down different logical veins of where they would go. But I think that this is kind of my best guess as somebody who has thought through it some. That Bitcoin doesn't fundamentally change human nature. There's good guys and there's bad guys. And I'd say all of us as a Bible believing Christian, I think all of us have inherent sin. We're all kind of messed up. I like to think of myself as a good guy, but I certainly am not perfect, right? So we tend to fall on a spectrum. There's people that are really, really bad, and there's people that are like kind of good, but they're even good people who are capable of bad, right? And so I think Bitcoin is great in the sense that it removes that central bank funder of all corrupt industries, like we just talked about. Like, you're taking off the head of the dragon if you take out the central bank. But those other things still exist. People are still going to compete for resources. If there's 21 million units of money in the world and it's, you know, infinitely divisible, people are still going to compete for those resources. And so certainly people will still steal, cheat, and lie to get as much of that resource as they can. I'm not saying all people, but the people that are in power right now will continue to try and do devious things. Now, the beautiful thing is that they don't have a cheat code. They then have to play the game by the same rules as the rest of us. And that's all we care about. If we sat down and played a game of Monopoly, and I think I actually referenced this in parallel, it might have been in Bitcoin evangelism. But my kids, we still to this day, you know, years ago, when I wrote the books, my kids would play Monopoly all the time. We still play Monopoly all the time. And my youngest daughter, she actually threw a fit one time because my son kept hiding his money under the table or under the board. And you're not like legally, you know, legally in the game, you're not supposed to hide your money. Like, there's supposed to be transparency in the game. So you can, you know, if you're making deals, you're making, you're making it for a certain amount of money or for a certain type of property or whatever. There's rules to the game. And my littlest daughter, I think she was 4 or 5 at the time. And in the book, I wrote about how she rage quit the game because my son kept abusing the rules and it wasn't fair the way he was playing. And so she just threw over the board and, you know, certainly she threw a fit. Part of it, the reason I wrote that is so that when she's 25 years old someday, she's going to read about her little tantrums and you know, can rub it in her face. But also too, the kind of profound point I put in there was even my 5-year-old realized that a game that doesn't have rules is not a game that's worth playing. I mean, and so right now we're all playing a game of Monopoly where every time we pass go, you and I get to collect $200, but somebody else gets to collect $3 trillion every time they pass go, right? It's just like we're talking about apples and oranges in terms of the rules by which we're playing. And so all we want to do as Bitcoiners is we want to play a game of Monopoly where everybody gets $200 when they pass go. Everybody gets the right to buy the properties on the board. when they land on the property. It's, you know, if you're Michael Saylor, you have the same opportunities as Nick. You have the same opportunities as Brian. Like, yes, Michael Saylor is going to have more Bitcoin than I have. And that's totally fine. As long as he bought it, doing things, playing by the same rules as everybody else. And even he has a sophisticated set of rules of how he can do it through public, you know, public company financing and stuff. That's fine. That's still within the rule set. He's able to, you know, he bought the best properties on the board early on. And so he's going to be racking up more money in the system. That doesn't make it corrupt just because there's haves and have nots. That's not what makes the system corrupt. It's simply the rules of the game. That's all we want to fix. And so, yes, there's going to be people that try to cheat, but as long as they don't have the authority to hack the rules of the system, then society will be better. And we can also hopefully, in the age of social media, and hopefully a little bit more transparency in social media, hopefully things like X continue to be around. We, you know, with Club Orange, we're certainly trying to build a social layer of people, of Bitcoiners, of truth seekers, so that hopefully if there's enough truth tellers or enough truth people in society, enough people in society that care about the truth, that when companies or individuals try to cheat the system, they get disregarded. In the same way that if you tried to introduce a fake block to the Bitcoin blockchain, the nodes of the network would disregard your transactions. If you tried to put in a transaction that said you get 100 Bitcoin when you actually didn't get 100 Bitcoin, all of the nodes on the network would say, wait a second, we all checked with each other and we don't see that transaction. You're trying to play against the rules. We're going to disregard you. Bitcoin set the standard for how we follow rules. And I think that that's a really, really good precedent for going forward. So yes, there are going to be haves and have nots. There's going to be people that try to cheat, but the rules of the game will be played the same by everybody on a Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I love how you started off with, we're not, human nature is not fundamentally going to change, but when we have a fair system and it's a level playing field, all of a sudden government doesn't have this unfair advantage of having limitless amounts of money they can create in order to fund lies. So there's still going to be lies, but they will not have a disproportionate mind share because they're not going to be able to be propped up by all this fake money being created.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it, I don't want to make it sound like it's not going to improve things, because I actually think it will make things improve, but it's not going to make society perfect, I guess. I think that some Bitcoiners have this idea that we're going to be in heaven on earth. And I don't know, maybe that's what happens, but I think that it's just going to make society better. And that's all I want out of it, is like you made that fantastic point, is that even government has to play by those same rules. If government wants revenue, it needs to tax. The only way it can make money is by taxing its citizens. And there's actually a level, I'm not a big fan of taxation, but there's a level of transparency in that. If the only way that government can make money is because they have to tax me for it, well, you sure as heck better earn what you're asking for, right? Yeah. And if you want to, like we said with war, like if you want to go to war, you need to make sure that society wants it. Like, it hopefully keeps a better check and balance on government, because in order for them to increase your taxes or to actually collect your taxes, they have to do what they say. There's an interesting statistic in parallel that it wasn't my statistic. I was quoting somebody else, but it's something like Congress has I believe it's a 92% disapproval rating. Or maybe it's a 98%. Man, I hope I can find it here. Well, I'll have to go back and find it because it's in here somewhere. But it's something, it's over 90% disapproval rating. So if you surveyed American citizens, they would say overwhelmingly, I don't like Congress. But do you know what the election rate of Congress people is? It's also over 90%. So Congress is somehow convinced people who almost unanimously dislike Congress. But the individual Congress people, when they go talk to their constituents, they've somehow convinced them that they're one of the good guys. They're like, yeah, you hate Congress, right? Yeah, it's all the other guys. I'm the good one. I think that that gap gets fixed a little bit on a Bitcoin standard. I think that those Congress people will actually have to earn your vote, because right now they can give you lip service. They can perpetuate propaganda because they don't really need to interact with the constituents, because they don't have to go to you to raise money. What they have to do to raise money is vote on bills that will just go to the central bank to get their funding. So they don't have to please the customer. They have to, like, their customer is the central bank. That meaning, if they want to get their program funded, Big Daddy, the central bank, is going to fund their program, not you, the little guy. It flips that. The central bank doesn't exist. You are now their customer, and you are the person that they have to please.
Wow. I've actually never heard it framed like that, but that is so clean. It's like going to a sound money standards flips it so that politicians no longer work for the central bank and corporations. They now work for individual citizens, which ironically, it's like right now they work for the central bank and corporations, and their propaganda, their whole mission to get reelected, is essentially convince citizens that they work for them while in reality working for the central bank. And when the central bank doesn't exist, if Big Daddy, big corrupt daddy that's fueling all of this, literally dies by switching to sound money, they don't really have that option anymore. And they don't have that unfair advantage of being able to tell people something and doing something different, because most people don't understand how it works. And yeah, it's like, it's not, I mean, propaganda, advertising is propaganda, right? Propaganda is everywhere. And I think the real nasty propaganda is the stuff that comes from politicians to convince people to do things using these. You know, I love how you literally identify each technique, you know, you have glittering generalities. You have all these techniques get laid out. And what's really interesting, and what actually inspired me to do a 21-minute short format podcast called Counterpropaganda, is once you see them and understand them, you literally see them everywhere. Everything I hear a politician say now, I can put into these buckets and say, well, it's very clear that he's leveraging this communication manipulation tactic, and now I see it. And I think, to me, the biggest immunity, you know, while the central bank exists, because I don't think it's going away tomorrow, I think it's inevitably on a path to dying. And I think Bitcoin and educating people about saving and sound money can accelerate its inevitable irrelevance. But in the meantime, I feel like, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, is the best way to protect yourself from propaganda to understand it? Like, if someone is like, okay, I see I'm being lied to, and yet I still kind of partially believe the lies because I'm just exposed to them so much. How do I, Brian, defend myself against this propaganda now that I know it's literally pervasive all around me all the time? What advice can you give to Canadians that are in this theater right now and are curious and are hungry to learn and are now like, man, that's nasty, but now I know. How do I protect myself from this? How do I protect my family members from propaganda?
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I think that one of the helpful parts of the book, I think the feedback I've gotten is exactly what you've pointed out, is that there's a section that I list the 11 forms of propaganda, and there might be slightly different ones. You could maybe get several more forms. I think 11 is like the main categories of propaganda. And so if understanding those is again going to open your eyes to it. But what I would say is, like, your first filter for defending against the power of propaganda is when you hear something and it makes you feel good and and it makes you feel validated, question it. Like that doesn't mean it's wrong, because there's lots of things you will hear that make you feel good and that are true, but that's easy. That's easy if something makes you feel good to just get the jollies from it and be happy about it. If it's the first time you've heard, and I would say the first time you've heard something, because if there's something, you know, like Bitcoin, you know, when I hear somebody rip about 21 million and digital scarcity and all the great things about Bitcoin, I've wrestled through Bitcoin enough to know that that is true, and it still makes me feel good, and that's okay. I get to enjoy it. I'm not saying to not enjoy when you hear truth, but I'm saying the first time you hear something, the first time you hear a politician make a promise, the first time that you hear a drug company say that we found a cure for cancer or the disease that you have, it makes you feel good. It makes you feel tingly. It makes you feel that the world is going to be okay. Those are the ones, that's the time to question it. And that's where the process of, okay, that's great. I'm loving that you're saying that, but now let me trudge through these forms of propaganda. Ah, you know what? You're kind of using the bandwagon thing on me right now. You're using the glittering generalities. You're using the call to authority or the call to experts. Okay. And those things in and of themselves are not always bad. This is where it takes wisdom and discernment, because just because somebody uses plain folks, you know, like a politician comes along. So plain folks is the idea that, you know, somebody's running for prime minister. And so it's the highest office in the land, but they're running on the fact that they're a farmer from some rural area. And it's like, he's a good old down, you know, he's a country boy. That's plain folks. Oh, he's a relatable guy. That doesn't mean that that guy's evil and corrupt and he's lying to you, but he is eliciting something from you. And so ask why. Well, why is he doing the plain folks thing? Because if he wants to sound like a common dude, maybe it's because he is a common dude, or maybe it's because he has ties to the most corrupt industries in the world, and he's going to be the face for you of those corrupt industries, so that everything that they do is filtered through his really down home Southern draw. That's going to make you feel good. And he's going to tell you lies right to your face, but it's going to feel good because he's one of you. Now, if that's the reason why, then it takes a little bit of digging. And so it doesn't mean we need to go around the world or, you know, go around our daily lives and just live in constant fear. As you start to exercise through and you start to see propaganda and you've wrestled through these things, you tend to do that process a lot faster. You tend to be really good at it, and kind of suss things tend to tickle your ears a little differently when that happens. And so I would just say
your pattern recognition starts to pick things up way quicker. Exactly. And it's like a muscle almost, right?
It really is.
It's like the less responsibility we take in our lives, the more vulnerable we are to being misled. Mm-hmm. Even if it's by some well-intentioned individual, at the end of the day, it does matter. And I think what you said there is perfect, where it's like, understand the tools so that you can detect them. But also, I think things get better when we collectively each take on a bit more responsibility for truth. Maybe that's just one layer deeper. Okay, they said this. What did they actually do? Like, take the extra 10 minutes to find out, okay, they said they were going to do this and it was going to give this result. What did they actually do? Oh, it turns out they didn't do what they said they were going to do at all. And then from then on, it's like you can chunk that person into a category where it's like, I'm not gonna take what they say at face value anymore. I don't have to investigate everything, but that person just tainted their reputation. And I think in a world of truth, reputation is one of the ultimate currencies.
Yeah.
And I think people who lie will face the consequences of being labeled as liars. And the only reason that can't happen right now, I'm talking specifically in Canada, is because the mainstream media and propaganda are almost interchangeable terms when you see it for what it is. They can fire so much propaganda at people that they can, even if someone knows someone's a liar, they can hear so many things that say this person is truthful and good that it might actually convince them that there's some element of truthfulness to that person. And, you know, the illusory truth effect, that when you say, I think you put the quote in your book from Joseph Goebbels, where it's like, you tell someone a lie often enough, it turns into truth. Knowing that means that we now have to just take some accountability for defending ourselves from hearing lies. Because, you know, I love my mother, God bless her. She thinks that she watches mainstream media to see all the lies and she can see through them all. But now that I know the illusory truth effect, I'm like, Mom, you might be getting swayed just by seeing the lies because you're just consuming them. And the only way to protect yourself is to literally defend yourself from even consuming that stuff. It's not a good use of your energy anyway. When did you come to this understanding? Like, even just, you know, we got 21 minutes left, ironically. Have you always had this understanding? Like, at one point did you realize that that propaganda was a thing? Did that coincide with when you started to understand Bitcoin? And do you remember any inflection point where it was like you went from not knowing to full on seeing that the emperor had no clothes? Like, what was that process like for you? Because I think sometimes it's helpful to hear people's stories who are maybe far along in their journey, if they can remember when it started, because a lot of times the different stories end up rhyming when you see the fundamental elements of it.
Yeah, I didn't get into Bitcoin because I saw it as a path to unwind the central bank's power. I think it was 2013 or something. It was Andreas Antonopoulos podcast or clip. And it was probably the third or fourth time I'd heard him talk about digital scarcity. And like, this is the first time humanity was able to create something that was both digital and scarce. Like, if you think about it, everything digital is you can copy and paste it endlessly. And so it finally clicked that yes, like everything needs to go digital, but for some reason money hadn't gone digital yet. So that was really what convinced me. I was like, okay, that's actually like a really important type of invention. And so that was when I started, you know, buying Bitcoin. So it wasn't this truth seeking endeavor. It was a general understanding that yes, money could be printed. And I understood that. And so scarce money was good. I grew up in a gold bug family. So there was that kind of understanding, but it wasn't an unwinding of propaganda. The first exposure I had to propaganda was actually in the medical field. I was, I don't know where you stand on vaccines, and you probably have to bleep that out
I don't even edit these shows. And I think, yeah, you don't want to paint a broad brush with everything, but I didn't get vaccinated. My child has not had one vaccine. She will never have a vaccine unless there's some catastrophic thing that convinces me otherwise.
Yeah.
And so no filter. Give us the truth.
So yeah, I just don't want you. I don't want you to get shadow banned or something. I don't think you're not bold enough, but anyways, so all that to say, so I, with my first daughter, she's 12 years old, and we didn't do the exact schedule that the CDC recommended, but we were doing a delayed schedule. So even with the delayed schedule, it was her DTaP vaccine. She went in, got the vaccine, or got the shot. I'll start tempering my language for the algo filters, but which is kind of a proof in itself. Like, we're on a propaganda episode. If I can't utter a word, it's not race. It's not a racial. It's not a hateful word. You can't even say it's hate speech or anything like that. But this episode might be getting slightly shadow banned just because of the word that I'm using. So anyways, like, if that's not a tip of the hat to
it's
to
only on Noster and RSS. I don't give a shit about YouTube. Any platform that can censor me, I'm not putting this on there. It's not for those
thank
people.
God. So, okay. Thank God. So, okay. So let's let it rip. So having said that, we took her in, and I don't need to go into all the details, but 10 days had passed and she hadn't pooped. Okay. So I like, that's kind of concerning. Then that night we wake up, this is kind of a little gross, but, we wake up, she's screaming. I'm like, okay, maybe she's got to poop or whatever. So I went to change her diaper and she hadn't pooped. Her intestine, her guts were hanging out of her by about 2.5 inches. Turns out, so we take her and rush her into the urgent care, get her taken care of. They give her anti-inflammatories. They get everything kind of pushed back into place. And then we take her to her pediatrician the next day, as soon as the pediatrician's in. And so the pediatrician's kind of looking at her chart, like shocked. And we're like, well, what's the matter? And she goes, I don't want to alarm you because everything turned out okay, but your daughter had intussusception, which the doctor didn't say this, but it's intussusception is an adverse effect of the DTaP vaccine. And she, what the doctor was worried about is that because the urgent care, the emergency room actually had kind of shoved everything back into place. For children, if you do that too fast, the way they'd done it, it actually is like highly likely that something could have ruptured and she could have internally bled. And so we could have woke up the next morning. My daughter could have bled out. By the grace of God, she didn't. That none of that happened. It was just painful for her, and she got through it. But what it was, and if you look into the mechanism, is every vaccine needs something called an adjuvant, right? So an adjuvant is an inherently toxic thing. I remember I used to say, oh, I wish they could just make vaccines with organic ingredients. You can't, because you need it to be inherently toxic, because when you put a dead virus into your body, your body's not going to create an immune response to it because it's dead. Like, what is it? Why does it need to fight that thing?
Needs a reason to attack it.
You put the dead virus in, and then you put toxic stuff in, and then your body's like, oh my gosh, we're being attacked. What is it? Oh, it must be this dead virus. So it's actually very brilliant and sophisticated. Good job, vaccine doctors. You guys are really smart. You also don't understand the human system completely because you're toxifying our body. But what happened is intussusception is a toxic reaction. Shocker, when you put aluminum in something, it caused her bowels to inflame so much that they had to be pushed outside of her body. And so I say all of that to be the graphic reality that was the first time I was like, oh my God, I am so sorry. I mean, as a father who is responsible for the safety, I started training Brazilian jiu-jitsu at the time. I started practicing my firearms because I want to be a dad that can defend not only his family, but someday. I remember when my daughter was born, that's when I started training Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I'd done kickboxing for years, but I thought, by the time she's 16, I want to be a bad A black belt. By the grace of God, I'm a black belt. I have my own jiu-jitsu school now, but I started training back then for that purpose. And, cause I wanted to protect my daughter, and here I was doing everything I can to protect and provide for my daughter. But because I didn't look into these things. I had read a little bit in order. That's why we were delaying the schedule, but I actually never dug into the science. The stuff's publicly available. The inserts are publicly available. And the information was there for me to look, but I listened to the experts. The experts is a form of propaganda. I had an expert tell me that this is what you're supposed to do. I was born with a knowledge that, you know, I was kind of brought up with a knowledge that this is what you do. And that's the most powerful form of propaganda, is when you, and this is really important. This is hitting it on the nose for this episode. And this is true for kind of anything, where we're talking about central banking, military industrial complex, medical, whatever. We're talking about it in the medical field right now, is if you have a drug and you want to convince the public of its safety, what you're going to do is you're going to do a safety trial on it, but you're only going to run the safety trial for 5 days. So you're going to give people a dose of something, and then you're going to check the safety profile for 5 days. This is true for the hepatitis B vaccines. You can look at the inserts for them. Section 6.1 of the hepatitis B vaccine, Recombivax and Energex. Go ahead and Google it. Anybody that's online. So you can see these for yourself. And this is true for all the other vaccines. So the safety trial is only 5 days. That is not enough time to look up autoimmune disorders, cognitive disorders, or neurological problems.
Totally a joke.
Hormonal. If you wanted to be able to tell the public you ran a safety trial and didn't want to know if it was actually safe or not, you would run a safety trial for 5 days. And that's exactly what they do for these things. And so then the reason why you would do that is not because you're going to show that safety trial to the public. It's because you're going to show that safety trial to the experts. You show that safety trial to the experts. The experts then go and tell the college professors. The college professors then go tell their students. When the news wants to run a story, the news is going to interview experts and college professors on what's the latest science around vaccines. You do that a few generations ago, and then what happens is the experts have told everybody, the college professors have trained a generation of educated people, and then the educated people raise the next generation with that being the common sense approach. As soon as you've worked propaganda into the common sense layer, the common sense layer of society, you have captured society. And so that's true with central banking. We all woke up, or we were all born into a generation where, yes, there's this thing called inflation. No big deal. Inflation is smoke filling up the building, and we all see it, and we know the building's on fire, and we're not leaving the building. Like, that's what inflation is. The same thing with the medical side of things. There's really alarming things in terms of safety profiles for these drugs. And for whatever reason, we just say, oh, it's okay. Some drugs are kind of dangerous a little bit. These things are reasons to exit the building, but for whatever reason, because the quote unquote experts tell us it's common sense to just go with the flow, we do that. And so all that to say is that the way that we unwind that is by simply asking the question. So your question to me was, did I have this zeitgeist moment? I'd say that was probably the first step, but it didn't unwind everything for me. For me, it was just very specific. It's like, wow, these drugs aren't safe. But guess what? As I started to read and dig into it, I'd already been buying Bitcoin at this point. As I'd started to read and dig into the drug stuff, I started to ask what's in my drugs. Then I asked what's in my food. Then I asked what's in my money. And when you ask what's in my money or what's in my drugs or what's in my food, then you're like, wow, there's bad stuff in there. Well, then why is that bad stuff there? Once you've asked what's in your food or what's in your money, and then you ask why it's there, that's when the blinders come off, because the answer to the why will give you a nefarious reason. And it's really, really sad. And that's the awakening moment for a lot of people. It's not just that bad stuff is there, but it's there for a reason.
That was really well said. And I appreciate you sharing that story about your family. Thank God that things worked out well for your daughter.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe, you know, that experience saved you from having another experience 5 years later that could have ended far worse, right? So in hindsight, everything ends up being good. It's all a beautiful design.
I agree.
I think you highlight one thing, which is that I think sometimes it's easy to assume that propaganda means blatant lies, like people telling us false information. But actually, the most heinous and nasty and sneaky propaganda is actually just the omission of important facts. because technically they're not lies, but lies of omission can be so gnarly because what you're not told might be the most harmful thing for you, not necessarily the false information that gets told. And so I think, again, in this era of truth, where there's not this unfair advantage and ability to project lies or to omit things at a giant scale, people that get caught lying don't get trusted anymore ever. And so the reputation of a company gets tainted once and no one ever goes to that company and they go bankrupt. And that's what should happen. This is the natural sort of system of purging lies and purging dishonesty from society. And I think fiat money that can be created out of nowhere fundamentally manipulates the math on that so that that doesn't hold true. And I think a return to sound money will bring that to more truth and will allow our collective immune system to just purge the manipulation and get back to where we don't have to constantly be as frantically worried about being lied to, because lies will just be harder to propagate through a long enough period of time.
Well, you have enough immune cells in the system, to use your analogy. You have enough white blood cells of truth seekers that will find that. I mean, when your body doesn't make enough of immune response, like you can die from a disease, even though your body's starting to prompt an immune response. The immune response, in order to get you healthy, needs to be robust. And that's been the problem with society, is that society has had, we've always had truth seekers. We've always had truth tellers, but we haven't had enough people of conviction to make that change happen. And so that's, I think, part of the passion that Bitcoiners have about telling the truth. And we see Bitcoin as a way to kind of bring more people over to the truth side, is because there's less incentive to be corrupted by the system when you have a fair money system. Is, hey, if we go to a fair money system, we will have it'll be easier for there to be more truth seekers and more truth tellers in society. That means more white blood cells for a healthy society.
Well said. And I think it just reinforces the notion of community being critically important, because it's not like every person has to research to the sand every single thing. No. The ideal is we have a network of people who all have their own individual veins that they want to go down, or experiences that they've learned from. And we can leverage the power of community to have this collective immune system where you can ask others who are actual authorities through proof of work, through proof of experience, not just through proof of fiat degree. And we can have this network effect of people who collectively value truth, are taking responsibility for truth, and help each other know the truth without having to research every single thing every single time. And even, I mean, on this topic of health, I mean, I'm getting mad FOMO seeing what's happening in the States. I mean, we're what, 8 days into the new year, and you're seeing this emergence of truth, whether that's with food. I'm not saying everything's better, but food and vaccines have been hot topics with the United States, and just seeing things, you know, the vaccine schedule going from 72 to 11, this is not a slight change. This is a paradigm shifting level of change. And frankly, I think it implies this tacit shift in whose allegiance do the leaders respond to? Is it the big companies, or is it the people that they want to serve? And I don't know, it's really good to see, because the United States, whatever people's opinion is of them, and frankly, the most intense propaganda in Canada in order to deflect away from the incompetence of politicians is actually to demonize the United States and the leaders there as the cause of our problems. And if you're Canadian listening to this, you need to do a bit of research, because it's simply not true, right? The best thing to do if you're incompetent is demonize the competent people and create division. And so I think it's amazing to see the United States lead the world in a positive direction and just be based, like bring back this sense of truth is what matters. I don't care whose feelings or what company's feelings or what company's profit line I hurt. The people are who I serve. And frankly, I don't care if people say that. I care if people do that. And it's just pretty awesome to see. So just to wrap up, we've got 6 minutes left. I'd love to know, as a Bitcoiner, as a father, as a business owner, like go down whatever path you want, but what are you getting most excited about for the year ahead? So if we look at 2026 as a chapter in your life, what are you stoked about for this year? It can be any domain. I love hearing what people are excited about, because it gets me excited.
I think that there's so much. I mean, I really do. I'm typically a pretty positive person, but I just think there's a lot of stuff to be excited about. I think we live in a great time. We're blessed and lucky. There's a lot to deal with. Like, the mental demand on us is very, very high, right? Yeah. Like, we've talked about this whole episode. You have a responsibility to work through these things. That's the downside. The upside is, if you do, guess what? There's green pastures ahead. And yes, the hill we're going over, the grass is greener on the other side. But don't be fooled. The grass is greener because it's filled with shit, right? Like there's manure in it, right? Like it's tough, but it's going to be so green and lush, and we're going to deal with it. Those who are willing to deal with it, there's promise and freedom ahead. And what I mean by that is that you look ahead and AI is coming, and you know, it's going to be the social media algorithms are probably going to be more addictive than ever, because you know, I believe that they're going to be making content that is being created as we're watching it. And it's going to be created just for you to be the most addictive piece of content that you could possibly sit in front of. And based on your perspiration or your eye movement or the way that your biological signs are responding to it, your resting heart rate or whatever, it's going to increase or decrease what the next scene of that thing is. Like, that's a crazy thought, right? And that's really sad. And there are people that are going to get plugged into that matrix, but then there's going to be a lot of people that unplug from that matrix. And I think some of the data that I've seen that's really promising on this is that social media usage, even by young people, but across all walks of life, actually decreased, not by a lot, but slightly a couple years ago. So it kind of plateaued and then dipped just a little bit for the first time ever in the history of social media. Social media usage was on an unstoppable increase. And sure, it saturated most of society. Like, you can't get past 100% of society, right? So it has to stop somewhere. But I think society, the young generation is sick of the constant dopamine hits of things that don't mean anything. And so I share all of that bad news because I just said I'm excited about the future. I share all that bad news because I think that the scales are falling off people's eyes to some degree for those who want it. And the future ahead, I think the future ahead is in real life. That's what we do at Club Orange. That's what I do in my other businesses. Everything is revolved around real life experiences and health, whether it's you have a chain of wellness studios called Salt and Light Wellness, where we do cold plunges and infrared saunas. So whether you're like, people are coming in and like doing things that are healthy, we do jiu-jitsu, you know, I have a jiu-jitsu school, it's called Mission Jiu-Jitsu. But the biggest thing that we're doing is Club Orange. Club Orange is connecting Bitcoiners in real life. And I think that's fundamentally going to be the different thing about Bitcoin than every other social layer in society is the Bitcoin social layer. It was born, yes, it was born online, but it very quickly grew through in real life meetups. It grew through person to person contact. So these people that had only ever kind of lived internet lives started coming back into the real world. And that's what we're doing with Club Orange is, hey, we understand that there's not a lot of people around you in your realm that get the things that we're talking about today, that are willing to work through propaganda, they've already kind of understood the central bank lie. And so they're kind of revolving their life around seeking truth and working against kind of the tyranny of the system. There's a group of people out there that are like that. And so connecting those people and getting them together, I think is going to be one of the most powerful catalysts for society that we can possibly do. When we see Bitcoiners and people who seek truth and who want freedom, when we see those people get together, good things happen. Like we said, you need as many white blood cells in the system as possible. And we're seeing that happen in real time. Like, that's the cool thing about my position with Club Orange. By the way, we used to be called Orange Pill App. So if anybody is on Orange
Pill
App.
Great rebrand.
I think it was good. I think it was good rebrand. Orange Pill App, it still has a fond place in my heart, but Club Orange is a little more broadly appealing and sounds cooler. And it's easier to say. We had so many people that were looking for Orange Peel App in the App Store and then not finding it. Anyways, so all that to say is that seeing a return to in real life is amazing. I love it. I think that there's going to be there's going to be a space for online. I'm going to go to things like your show. I'm going to go to things that I know that are truth seeking programming, and I'm going to get my news. I'm going to get my daily fix, and then I'm going to go back out into real life, because that's where life happens. All of the best experiences in life are things that you did in real life. It was the first time you held your daughter. It was the day you got married. It was the time you hung out with friends. It was when you were able to be around people and feel their warmth. And so when society returns to that, I think that things get a heck of a lot better. And I think the rapid improvement in technology is great because it's going to take some of our menial tasks and it's going to allow us to just run those automatically. That also gives us more time for in real life experiences, but the inundation of content that is just created out of thin air by some mindless robot is going to make it so that you're not going to want to sit around and just watch that stuff all day. You're going to want good, nutritious content. And then once you've had your fix, you're going to go back out into the real world. Just like if you eat a nice hearty steak, you don't sit around and snack on chips all day. You only snack on chips all day because you didn't get enough nutrition. You got enough nutrition, you go back out, you get back to work, you get your exercise in. The internet is filled right now with just junk food. And so I think people are getting sick of the junk food. People want steak.
Well said. Very well said. And I think there's a hunger for in person. There just is. People are realizing there's no substitute for 3D. And just like junk food is like these empty calories that trick our system into thinking it's good, but is actually devoid of nutrients. I think the same metaphor can be had for in-person connection, where when you meet someone in person, you make eye contact, you shake their hand, you hug them, you have a memorable experience in 3D. There is a subset of connection nutrients that comes from that that you cannot get through any online source. Online connection is basically the junk food of the community world, and in real life connection with like-minded people. And I think the value offering of Club Orange is that it can be actually pretty hard to find Bitcoiners around you. You got to search real hard. The idea of getting an application that has curated all these people in one spot where you aren't the product, where you pay for the product that gives you value, is pretty special. So amazing. Thank you, Brian, for your time. Thanks everyone for listening. We hope that was valuable. We hope you got triggered a little bit, but are also in good enough faith to kind of keep pursuing it. Let us know you talked about Club Orange, talked about Salt and Light. Is there anywhere else that people should go to find you? You've written Bitcoin Evangelism and Parallel, two amazing books. I highly recommend them. I was telling you before the show that Parallel is a book that I read each year because each time I read it, I take something different. My understanding of the world has changed and I get to absorb a different subset of it. And if you really want to understand the granularity of propaganda so you can develop a really strong immune system to it and detect it and protect yourself from it, I highly recommend Parallel. There's an entire section there about propaganda, and that was my biggest source material for understanding it, and it has helped me immensely. So thank you for all the work you're doing, Brian. Anywhere you want to send people before we close out?
No, man, anybody's listening to the show, reach out to me on Club Orange. I always zap people some sats. We have a native wallet on the app. It makes it really easy to send Bitcoin around. So I'm always happy to make friends. I try to buy my friends. See, I told you we got to play by the same rules. I'm still trying to be corrupt and buy favor with people, but I'll send you some sats if you jump on there.
Well, it's only fake if the money's fake. If the money's real, that's then true. Basically you're sending them love and time and energy. So I think you get a pass there.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If this episode offered you value and you want to support the show, go to CanadianOrangeParty.com. You can donate there. That's it for this episode. We'll see you in the next one. Ciao.